Paranormal Perception presents Women in the Paranormal is yet another audio creation from 22 Creations Multimedia, LLC.
These are standalone once-a-month episodes highlighting women and their contributions to the paranormal community. Here's your host, Amanda Ashley.
Welcome to this Paranormal Perception spinoff show. Before I bring on my guest, let me give you a short story about how the show even came to be. I'm not sure if he's mentioned this on air or not, but Henry's been wanting to do an episode highlighting women and their contributions in the paranormal field and community. For various reasons, it never panned out until last year, when finally the stars aligned and he was able to include an entire panel highlighting women in the paranormal at OC Paracon. Pretty shortly after OC Paracon, Henry asked me if I would want to be the host of a show called Women in the Paranormal, where I could have a bit more time to talk to the guests one-on-one. At first I said no, for various reasons, but the more we talked about what he wanted it to be, I changed my mind and ended up saying yes. And here I am. If you've ever wondered, I am not a ghost hunter, and it's actually been forever since I've done some serious paranormal investigating. I don't have any psychic abilities, and I've never been a guest on a paranormal TV show or anything like that. For many years, my job has actually been researching paranormal stories for various websites and companies, so I definitely understand the academic, cultural, and social side of ghost stories. But I don't have much experience with the practical application of encountering them. So why are you hosting a paranormal show? I can almost hear you all ask. Well, mostly because I'm curious. Curious about all the experiences and research I hear from paranormal folks, both female and male. And it's also about inspiration. There's some amazing work being done by some kick-ass women, and I really look forward to hearing more about their journeys and being able to share all of that with you. I've personally had one major paranormal experience in my life, which at this point was so long ago, it's easy to doubt myself. But other than that, not a whole lot has happened, despite putting myself in situations and locations that you'd think would be chock full of ghosts. I will admit some skepticism on my part, but not to the point of downplaying anyone else's experiences they're having. You've got to admit that there are some experiences that are a little hard to believe unless you are right there experiencing it. I guess that's just the nature of this field. There seems to be some sort of element of faith to it. But don't worry, this show isn't out to debunk anything. It's to hear and understand. You could say to get a new perception, since this show is a spinoff of Paranormal Perception, after all. So now you know what it is all about. My first guest is someone who you've heard several times on Paranormal Perception, and if you've attended OC Paracons, that's Nicole Strickland. Nicole is a paranormal researcher, author, speaker, podcaster, so many things when it comes to the paranormal, and I personally like to think of her as the Queen of the Queen Mary. She's even one step ahead of this show and its subject matter. She co-authored a book called Women on the Fringe, Groundbreaking Women of the Paranormal, that came out last year. And here she is. Welcome to the show, Nicole.
Wow, this is such an amazing concept, obviously, right? I mean, I co-authored a book about it as well. So I'm really, really excited to see where this goes. And thank you so much for having me.
No, thank you for agreeing to be here.
And sure.
I know you, so full disclosure, I do know Nicole. But for anybody who hasn't, you know, maybe missed other episodes with you on it, let's start at the beginning with a little getting to know you section. Who or what, or was there an experience that sparked your interest in the paranormal?
Yes, it goes back to childhood, and you'll hear a lot of paranormal investigators, though they're asked the same question, what got you into the field? And a lot of times it's maybe a profound experience or just a lifelong interest. So for me, it's a combination of that. So as far back as I can remember, I always had this interest in ghosts, specifically ghosts, haunted locations, the afterlife, spirit communication. And so I pretty much would read anything on the subject, watch TV programs on the subject. And so that interest stayed with me. And then as I got older, again, I researched it heavily, but I had a very profound experience when I was in college with my maternal grandmother. And I've shared that a lot on shows, but she passed away. I'm going to kind of preface it very shortly. She passed away. She called me the day before she passed. And I talked with her, and the next day, I found out that she had passed. And so here I was in Arizona, so I had to come back to San Diego to be with family for a few days. So then when I went back to Arizona, I started having experiences in my apartment that I didn't have prior to her death. And at first I thought, well, I'm in an apartment. I'm in an upstairs unit. It's my neighbors. It's ambient noise, what have you. But it was a succession of experiences, and it culminated into me finally seeing her apparitional form. She looked about 10 years younger, and she looked really healthy. So I thought, geez, I'm grieving her. Am I projecting that, or did she really visit me? I like to think that it was the latter and that she really visited me. But even prior to that, as far back as I can remember, I think I was like 4 or 5 years old in Las Vegas, and I had experiences in our house growing up when I grew up there as well. So just an interest, and it stayed with me. And the experience I had with my grandmother really got me out into the field. And that's when I started to investigate locations, historical locations, businesses, private residences. And so that's kind of how it started out for me.
Okay. And seeing your grandma, I mean, I think that's a kind of a comforting type thing, I'm sure.
Yeah.
It wasn't,
yeah,
you know, a terrifying moment for you.
No, not at all.
When you were a little bit younger, you mentioned you had some experiences when you were 4 or 5. Were those kind of more scary? Was there any context to it, or was it more confusing of what you,
well,
what you were seeing?
Yeah, it was. So I was born in Huntington Beach, and then my I'm an only child. And so then my parents and I moved out to Las Vegas for a few years. And so I remember communicating with an older man. I think now that I look back on it, he probably was someone from the Gold Rush days. My parents at the time probably thought, well, you know, she's at that age, imaginary friends, whatnot. They really weren't too concerned. The interactions I had with him weren't scary at all, anything like that. Probably just more, like I said, just someone maybe from the Gold Rush period or whatnot. Probably not so much because our homes were new at the time. So this was like maybe 1983, 84 era. So the homes were new. So it was probably he was connected to the land, so to speak. But one experience I had, and this was actually the first one that I could remember, and I was around 5, maybe 4.5 or 5. We had a backyard pool. It was summertime. It was dusk. We were getting out, drying off, when all of a sudden, and I don't even know if this is paranormal, it just was something that I remember distinctly and that I couldn't explain, of course. I saw what looked like a darker, maybe dark gray shadow trying to morph into maybe like a humanoid shape. It kind of floated right to us, and it went like right by my parents and I. And I don't know why I remember this, but I distinctly remember saying, "Mommy, Daddy, did you see that? Look at the draft." I don't know why I termed what I saw as a draft, but it was something that I saw. They didn't see it. So again, I don't know if it was paranormal, but it was something definitely odd. So, but just going back into that house, they didn't have any experiences to my knowledge. It was just basically me with this older gentleman who I think is probably from like the Gold Rush period, maybe. And then of course, you know, encountering my grandmother's spirit really was the one thing that really got me kind of out of the lab, so to speak, and really right, investigating the field actively as an adult.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. Anytime it's a familial death, it just feels kind of safer to lean into what's going on there and poke through. Did your parents, as this became, you know, more of a career for you, and as you got more and more into it, did they support, you know, did they understand? And even if they weren't having experiences, did they fully support your paranormal research?
Yes, I'm actually very lucky in that regard. And I actually was raised Catholic. You know, I went to Catholic school and all of that. I don't practice the religion anymore. I consider myself more maybe like a spiritualist, but I've been very lucky. Both sides of my family, my parents, of course, my relatives, every single one of them is very supportive. And they always want to hear what I'm doing. And, you know, when we get together, they want to hear stories and things like that. My parents are both believers. My dad is one of those that he's always been interested in collective consciousness and universal knowledge, things like that. So this field completely interests him. And of course, my mom, she won't admit it, but she's very intuitive. It almost passes down from her mom, so the maternal line, and she's had experiences as well. So yeah, they've been really, really supportive. So I'm really lucky in that regard.
Yeah, that makes a huge difference always to have everybody's support.
Totally.
When you're, we will go, of course, into the Queen Mary more than that, but because you visit the Queen Mary with your mom so often, when you two are together, like with your energies, is she able to have her own experiences?
She has. Yeah, she has. And of course, I've been to the ship many more times than she has. Interestingly, she went way before I went. And this was back in, I want to say the year 2000, 1999 or 2000. She actually used to ballroom dance. And so she went with a gentleman, traveled to the Queen Mary around that time, and they danced in the Veranda Grill. So she was introduced to the ship before I was. My first visit to the ship, actually boarding, it was in 2005. I first saw it in the year 2000. But she gets the Queen Mary's energy. I remember one time, and this was I think the first or second time that I went with her. And we were on our deck right outside of the Grand Salon there, one of the grand entrance doors to the former first and third class pool. She all of a sudden started to get tears in her eyes. And she said, "I just feel so much love here. I just feel so, so welcomed and just so comforting." And I said to her, "You get it. You get the energy of the ship." But she's had experiences. She's smelt, you know, phantom cigar smoke. She's seen fleeting, you know, shadow figures and apparitions out of the corner of her eye. Not as much as I have, unless she just doesn't share, but she's usually pretty open in sharing it. But she loves it. She absolutely loves the ship. So we're going tomorrow, actually, for the Royal Sunday brunch. So we're excited.
That's so cool. And you guys, do you walk around the ship? Do you spend the day there once you get there and you have your brunch and then walk
Yes.
around and everything? Yeah.
Yeah. And she actually, she's spent the night on two different occasions now, and she loves it. So she's like, "When do you want to go back?" So we're going to spend a couple of nights, I think, at the end of March. So she really loves it. She loves the staterooms, you know, the feel of the staterooms and walking around. She feels really comforted and really connected to the ship. So I think she's one of those that really gets it. So it's cool. Yeah, we have fun when we're together.
Yeah, I know you and I have talked about this in the past, about how when certain people come on and they're just like, you almost see them take that like breath where it's
yes.
like, oh, okay, I'm home, that sounds a little bit too dramatic, but it's just like this energy where you're like, okay, I'm here, like where I'm supposed to be. It's like, it's the weirdest feeling of like exhaling into this like relaxing, I don't know, meditative state. When you step on board. So it's kind of fun. I know you experience it, of course, all the time, but that must be pretty special to have your mom too next to you and both experiencing it at the same time. And just when it's hard to describe that feeling, you know, someone experiencing it with you is priceless.
Oh, it's absolutely priceless. And you described exactly the very first time that I stepped on board, the second and I was on A-deck, the second my feet landed on board the ship, I felt familiar. I felt as if I was there before. I felt just complete love surrounding me. It's weird. And in talking with former crew and passengers too, you know, they feel it too. Like June Allen, one of our friends, she was one among the first wave of war brides. And she puts it, her term, how she describes it is, the ship knows the people that can connect to her, and the ship chooses those people. And so she, it's interesting to hear different people use different terminology, but in essence, they're describing like the same sort of feeling. So it's really, yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah. I think it's a very special feeling. And if you felt it at any location, you kind of know what we're talking about here.
When totally.
Yeah. You feel that familiar home feeling. You had mentioned, you know, when you were young, seeing kind of the like Gold Rush 49er type person. And so.
Right. Yeah. That's who I would guess.
It kind of makes me think, you know, your need to investigate or understand a place or be connected to a place, it could have gone that way, right? You could have gone, or maybe you have, into deep dive, you know, Gold Rush type things. But instead, you are an absolute Queen Mary historian of the highest degree, right?
So, oh my God, I know about that. But
yes,
yeah.
You are. She is. She is. But so, you know, that's what. It's interesting what kind of twists and turns, because that could have been a formative experience where you are now throwing yourself into all matters of mining and gold rushing, right? But instead, what do you think made you, you know, was it the feeling on the Queen Mary? What kind of got your interest started where it was just like, this is absolutely like, you know.
It's, you know, I've been asked this before, and it's kind of hard to answer. It just fell into place. It's not something that I was consciously thinking. Like when I first went on board in 2005, I didn't at that point say, okay, I'm going to write 3 books and now working on a 4th. Can you believe it or not? I'm going to do all this. I didn't think that at all. It just happened. It's like the universe almost had this blueprint. And it kind of paved out this path that, in a way, I was destined to go down, if that makes sense. And so I haven't really looked back. It's just, you know, having that first experience in 2005, it was an immediate soul connection. I've immediately fell in love with that ship, as many other people have as well. And so that, I think, was the main foundation, which just kind of propelled me to do all these other things. And I've, as you know, a lot of people who've worked on board and sailed on board. And it's interesting how the Queen Mary, and she's done this pretty much since she was built, unites people and connects people from different backgrounds. And so I've actually met many of my best friends that I consider lifelong friends. I've met through the Queen Mary. So it's really cool.
Yeah, I agree. Once there's that shared feeling, it just friendships and everything. It's so solidifying. Those are
totally
some of my longest friendships too. Actually, are people I've met on the ship. So
isn't that amazing?
It's an interesting, and they're dynamic.
Great people too.
Yeah,
you know, and we share this, you know, common denominator of a passion for the history of the Queen Mary and the Queen Mary herself. But these are great people. Very interesting people, good people. And so, yeah, I feel blessed in many regards because of it.
And I know you said from, you know, 2005 on, that was kind of, you know, you're digging into the history and
right.
your books. Have you ever, like when you were younger or leading up to that, did you research the stories at all? Or was it kind of like a passing thing? Oh, you knew, because you don't live too far away from the Queen Mary, but it's not like when you're in Long Beach, I'm from Long Beach, you know, you know the Queen Mary, you've probably been on field trips and things like that. So it was in our minds when you're raised there. It's
right.
We kind of grew up hearing all the stories and whatnot, but.
Oh, I bet.
Had you.
Yeah, living there.
Yeah. Had you, prior to the 2005, did you kind of look into it or.
No,
not really.
And that's what's interesting. I knew there was a historic ship in Long Beach, but I had obviously not ever gone. So this all started after my very first visit in 2005. That was it. It was just from that moment on. And I tell people there's so much to know about the Queen Mary that you can literally go a lifetime and still not uncover every little historical detail. So.
That is very true. It seems like even with, you know, you mentioned you're working on your fourth book, you said, right? Right.
Yeah. I after RMS Queen Mary Voices from Her Voyages, I said, okay, no, I'm done. But it again, you know, it's something that just kind of developed, and it's, I feel like I have the green light to go with it. And so I'm working on it. So we'll see. But
It just seems like there's so much, you kind of find different aspects to take and different stories to tell. And it doesn't ever feel, you know, it just feels very natural to continue and share what you're learning and everything.
That's exactly how it is. I mean, I just did a presentation, I believe it, when was that, on the 7th through San Diego Oasis about the Queen Mary. And I never envisioned that I would, you know, be researching this legendary ocean liner ever. If you asked me this, you know, 21 years ago, no, I'd not. But it's weird how things happen and just play out for us.
Yeah, you never know. You definitely never know what kind of twists and turns are coming. And I always find it kind of cool that you present about the Queen Mary in San Diego to kind of spread the word, and hopefully then people come and visit and, you know, kind of like get the bug and want to see for themselves.
That's exactly it. It's a warm feeling to be able to be a messenger of sorts and share her legacy with people. And it reminds me of the starfish poem. If I can entice just one person to go to the ship,
right,
then I feel like I've done my job.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And so your book that came out last year, The Women on the Fringe, mm-hmm. How did that come about? You have some co-authors. Did you guys get together? And how did you guys form that?
Yeah, so Marie D. Jones, she actually lives in San Marcos, which is about 30 minutes where I'm at in San Diego. It was actually her idea. And so she approached me and said, hey, I have this idea for, you know, an anthology talking about different women in the paranormal. Would you want to write it with me? I was like, yeah, absolutely. That's a great idea. And then her and the other co-author, Denise Agnew, who lives in Arizona, Marie and her write. They're co-writers. They do screenplays and things like that. So Denise was brought on board as well. And so that's how that all came about. The three of us, I swear, I don't even know how many Zoom meetings we must have had talking about the book. But it was fun to write, you know, getting to learn about these different women in different branches in the paranormal. And honestly, there were so many other ladies we could have featured. But I think, what is there, like 25, 26 ladies in there? Like I said, different branches of the paranormal, different experiences. And so it was a lot of fun to write, and people seem to enjoy it. So we're really happy about that.
Yeah, I guess you guys could always do a second, or like an abridged, if there was a demand to put more in, and
you could just kind of
keep it going, just keep it rolling.
Absolutely. Yeah, we've talked about that idea. So whether it'll happen, it's hard to know, but we'll see. How it plays out.
In time.
Yeah.
And you have been in the paranormal for quite a while now, and I don't think it would be surprising to anybody that it is a very male-dominated field. So Do you have any roadblocks or kind of setbacks that you've faced as you've come into this as a profession? Have you ever had any kind of pushback or anything that you were kind of like, ugh, about?
Just pushback? I'm trying to think. There's it's so oversaturated now. There's a lot of people, you know, in the field investigating. But I guess for me, I don't know if it's really a setback, but paranormal research obviously entails a lot more than just walking around, you know, a cemetery at night and taking a few photos. So some people may just want to be thrilled and thrill seek, and that's it. And yet they want to call themselves a paranormal investigator. Well, no, I'm talking about the different psychological, I guess, aspects of it. So someone that's motivated to do all the types of research. So, you know, historical research, interviewing witnesses, you know, preliminary investigations, to reviewing all your data, you know, putting that all together and whatnot. geological research, sometimes genealogical, all of that, it's time consuming and it's tedious, and you really have to want to do it and have that passion. So I guess one of the things that sometimes annoys me is, you know, you have people that have that psychological mindset of, okay, yes, I do want to devote myself to all the different, I guess, elements to paranormal research, versus people that just want to just go and thrill seek and that's it. And then they want to call themselves a paranormal investigator. That's one thing that kind of annoys me, but I'm trying to think, no, I haven't really had any major like pushback or anything like that I can think of.
Yeah, that's a goal. First, that's great that you haven't, but also that is a good point with how pop culture and maybe media culture in general, with the rise of social media, it's a lot easier to, like you said, have a lot of thrill seeking type things going on, and they kind of skip over the like dregs of, you know, looking through pictures and audio and kind of like the back end of the everything that goes into paranormal investigation.
Yeah, so it needs to be a balance, I think. You know, I mean, entertainment's great, and I think some of it is fantastic, but there's an educational component too that I think a lot of people will benefit from. So if you can balance those two, then I think you have it made.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And you have done some paranormal, started the San Diego Paranormal Research Society, is that correct?
Yes.
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 And then tell me about that. Are you still involved in doing investigations with them?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. So I founded it in 2009, and we're mainly based in San Diego, not to say that we won't travel, you know, to like Long Beach or LA or other areas. So we primarily do historical locations, sometimes private residences. We're very selective on those for various reasons. And then of course, presentations. We're an educational team too. So, you know, I offer classes on the ropes of paranormal investigation. And I'm one of these that I feel like there are no experts in the field, just because, you know, it's so gray and not black and white. But there are people that have devoted a lot of time over the years, and so they have a lot of knowledge. So we try to impart what we've learned and what our experiences are. So yeah, we're still active. I haven't done as many investigations in the last couple of years. But again, we're still active, hoping to resume and get more busy probably this summer. But it's, you know, and I also too, I'm the California coordinator for the Ghost Research Society, which is based out in Chicago, and that's run by Dale Kaczmarek. He's been a huge mentor of mine. He's been in the field for, oh my gosh, many, 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 many years. So I learn a lot from that team as well, and I've gone with them in the Midwest and have done some interesting locations like the Lincoln Theater, and we did a bowling alley. We went to places in Louisville. We went to Waverly Hills Sanatorium. So it's great to work with different people and get different perspectives.
Yeah, I agree. The more people and the more types, like you had mentioned, there will be a tech person and a historian, and there's all kinds of everybody working together. It makes it kind of interesting, and it makes it a lot more well-rounded, as you mentioned before. In any of the groups that you're involved in, right, there's male and female, obviously.
Sure, yeah.
Do you guys keep a pretty well-rounded, okay, let me be blunt about it. So sometimes in TV shows and, you know, pop culture type things, they kind of have the ladies are there for the feelings, you know?
Yes,
They're only there as the empath or but do you find on your teams, like, are we going like we have some STEM ladies, you know, we have ladies that are doing the scientific things and in practical application in the field? Do you find that both men and women are doing kind of both sides of it?
I think we're getting more toward that. I think a few years ago it was more, you know, and a lot of people will cringe when we use the word science. I'm going to use it. I'm going to say scientific. I'm going to say science. But I think in the past it was more that fine line, okay, men are going to do more of the tech stuff, right? The videography, the camera work, you know, setting up the equipment, all of that, whereas women are more there for the intuitive, metaphysical side. But I think I'm seeing a shift in that now. I think more women and men are having a combination of that, because I'm seeing men now even trying to apply their intuitive abilities and whatnot. So I think I see a shift, for me anyways, in the field, where it's not going to be so women are here for, you know, the intuitive side and men are here for the tech side. We're seeing that difference where it's a combination. I think that that's healthy because, you know, men can be intuitive as well. And men have, you know, can channel and whatnot as well. So, and I like that it's shifting more toward that, because I do know a lot of women who are very good technologically, you know, and setting up equipment and whatnot. I mean, I'm not an advanced techie myself, but I can absolutely do that. You know, I can edit my own audio and you know, set up cameras and, you know, IR cameras and whatnot. So I think it's a good balance that we're kind of having everyone just kind of blend in and kind of do what they feel comfortable with on an investigation.
Yeah, I love to hear that. I like to hear that everybody's kind of switching around roles and trying a little bit of everything. Because, yeah, you also never know when you're on an investigation, you never know what you like to do until you do it, which might sound stupid. But it's like, hey, you know what? I love editing. Hey, I love pouring through, you know, I don't mind pouring through hours of audio or video. And, you know, it's kind of like if everybody gets a chance to see what they like to do, I think it would surprise a lot of people.
Oh, yeah. And I love the audio aspect. I could sit there and review audio for hours. Of course, it's good to take breaks because you don't want, you know, audio pareidolia and whatnot.
Right.
But love it. That's my thing, doing audio experimentation. That's what I absolutely love. And I forgot to make the point earlier. I don't think people should be pigeonholed into just having a certain role. Right. So maybe someone is really good with historical research. Great. They can do that if that's what they enjoy doing. But let's say they may want to learn something else. Well, they should be able to have that ability too, or that chance as well, to try out the different roles. So I don't think, you know, people should be pigeonholed it. Okay, you're a tech person, you're the research person, and that's how it's going to be from here on out.
Yeah.
And I think agree. We used to see that more. Now that's changing.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. That does feel very, I can almost even picture, you know, TV shows and whatnot where it's like, you know, they flash the name and it's like, you know, the tech and that this and the medium and the everyone gets in these very narrow. It's like, no, these are whole people. I'm sure they're doing other things. You're not just doing one thing, just standing there and, you know, reading a history
exactly.
book.
Exactly. Yeah, it's good to be cross-trained, you know, and another thing too, everyone, maybe not everyone on the team, but at least someone on each investigation should have BLS and CPR certification.
Oh, yes, that's right. That's a really good point.
Brings in their emergency protocols, you know, whether it's a wildfire or an earthquake or things like that. I'll share an experience. I think I talked about this at the panel at OC Paracon last year. We were at I'm not going to say the name of the restaurant because I don't want its business to be hindered, but it's in Oceanside and it sits on a Native American burial ground there. And so we were investigating there one night, six of us, two teams of three. I was downstairs with my team and then the other three were upstairs when two men came with guns through the kitchen, broke in, right? So we were lucky. I'm still here, but that could have been very tragic. Yeah. But again, having an emergency sort of protocol set in place is really important as well. Making sure that you have permission by management to be on the premises, because the cops there were like, okay, why are you guys here? And so, you know, we explained, you know, here's the signed permission form from management. We're here doing an investigation. And so we were detained and then they let us go. They didn't know if maybe they needed to ask us questions, but still. So little things like that, that really have nothing to do with the actual paranormal investigative methodology, but very important. CPR certification, because you never know, right?
Yeah.
BLS certification, you never know. People have broken their ankles on investigation. So that's really important as well.
Yeah, I think even just now thinking of locations that are maybe not in the best, you know, state that you're walking mm-hmm. through, and it's dark, and you have oh. some kind of like maybe headphone on, or just your whole sense of like perception of where you are is kind of thrown off sometimes, you know, when you're in a dark space that you're not familiar with. So yeah, you're right. The littlest, having a first aid kit, having people that know what they're doing would make a huge difference.
Yeah, exactly. Just little things like that. It all adds to the experience.
I feel like before you have mentioned that you would not necessarily categorize yourself, although you have intuitive feelings and stuff, you would not say you were psychic or type when you're anytime really, but when you're on an investigation, are you more tapped in? Would you say you're more tapped into kind of tech stuff, or are you kind of going into your psyche or your intuition?
That's a good question. A combination. I've never classified myself as actually a psychic medium, but I do have the ability. I think we all do. Honestly, some people are just more tapped into it than others. It does run down my maternal line. My grandmother was very intuitive, very empathic. So my mom is, and it's obviously been passed down to me. So I almost consider myself more of an intuitive type of investigator, but at the same time, I do employ equipment as well. So I think for me, it's a balance of both of those. Some teams are strictly, I'm going to use that word again, they strictly want to use tech. They don't really want to use any esoteric or metaphysical types of experiments, and that's fine. Other teams may be the opposite and may want to just work more from a metaphysical perspective. I think for me, blending the two for me works the best. And so that's how I've always approached the work that I've done.
Yeah, I could see how that would be way more helpful to be, yeah, bend either way and kind of
yeah.
be more open and accepting to taking information, both, you know, physical and from, you know, I don't know what you call the other side or whatever
yeah, well
is happening.
Said, yeah. No, both absolutely. Sides. Yeah, well said.
It feels like, at least in your teams or in the experiences you've had, you haven't had a lot of kind of, you know, like you said, kind of setbacks or discouragement. As a woman, it seems like you have been fortunate to have, you know, a good team and people who believe in you, you know, family and friends and whatnot. But would you give any advice to any women who are kind of wanting to get into the paranormal aspects of things, whether it's, you know, writing or being on a team or anything like that? Do you have any, because there may be some hesitation, you know, maybe they think they don't belong or they're just a little bit nervous. Do you have like anything you would kind of tell a friend?
Advice.
Tell a friend?
For me, I would say first and foremost, kind of reflect on why you want to be in the field, whether it's to be an investigator or maybe write about the topic or speak about the topic. Reflect on that, kind of just contemplate, you know, your motivations for that, and reflect on that. And then once you have that down, my advice is, you know, always follow your heart. You know, some people may not have familial support, but that shouldn't deter them. You know, there are people that I know that don't have a lot of family support, but yet they're still in the field because it's what they want to do and they have that passion for it. So if you have that passion to really want to explore the unknown, that's going to carry you very far. If someone is motivated, and this is my opinion, and let's say they're motivated just by superficial reasons, maybe they just want to seek fame and that's it, but they don't really want to put in the work or effort, I don't know how long they'll last. So that's why I say, first and foremost, reflect on why you want to be in the field, whatever it is. And then once you've decided, let's say, okay, I want to be an investigator, maybe shadow a team, you know, go to conferences like OC Paracon, read books. There are tons of books on the subject, podcasts, things like that. Get acquainted that way. Talk to investigators that have been doing this for a while. So those are some of the tips that I would say for people. If you look in your area, you know, get on and see if there's any meetup groups in the area, any teams, even if they're not accepting members, maybe they may allow you to maybe shadow or get some training, take a class, something like that. So those are some tips that I would offer.
Oh, that is actually fantastic. I've never really thought of that, but figuring out your why seems like the biggest one. Yeah. Actually, not just in the paranormal, life
we
lessons
may not know.
In everything, exactly. Maybe figure out your why and then proceed from there. Yeah. Is it coming from the right place? Is it coming from like a true rooted passion or curiosity or where are you going with this? Where are you coming and going with this?
Exactly.
That's excellent.
And you said it. Excellent you said advice. It perfectly. Reflect on seeing if it's coming from the right place.
Yeah.
Because if it is, that's the motivation. That's going to carry you. So if you have that, that's the foundation. And you'll just have all kinds of doors and windows open for you.
Yeah.
But again, someone who's like, well, I just want to make money. I don't care about learning, you know, about what this or that. Well, you know, you may not last as long. So
absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes, that's absolutely excellent advice. And as we're wrapping up here, do you have any upcoming appearances or books you'd like to talk about? I know you have a podcast that's going to be coming out sometime soon.
Sure. Yeah, I just did a couple presentations through Oasis here. The Queen Mary was on the 7th, and then a couple weeks prior to that, I did one on the afterlife. I have about 15 different presentations all about different aspects of the paranormal and afterlife. I am, like I said, working on another book about the Queen Mary. Women on the Fringe came out last year. It was 2023. Published the Afterlife Chronicles, exploring the connection between life, death, and beyond. So that's out there. Let's see what else. I do have a podcast coming up. It's the Life Inspiration Project. I'm guessing this spring. I'm a little behind. I was supposed to do it like around November, get it started, but it's coming. It's coming this spring. So I'm trying to think what else. That's pretty much it right now. I'm just doing, you know, podcast interviews, presentations, things like that. So I might have a filming opportunity coming up next week. Obviously can't talk about that. But so, yeah, just kind of taking what's, I guess, thrown at me and, you know, here we are. So, but this has been awesome. Thank you so much for having me.
No, thank you so much. And I can't wait to hear your podcast. I'm looking forward to listening to that when you in the spring sometime.
That'd be great. I'd love to have you as a guest too.
No, thank you.
We'll talk about it for sure.
We sure will. And people can find you, of course, at NicoleDStrickland.com, and that kind of has everything that's going on with you, and that's updated. And so if anyone wants to check that out. And thank you so much for being on here, Nicole. I really appreciate it. My first guest.
Thank you.
And I'm glad it's you. And it was lovely to talk to you.
I know. We've known each other for a long time. Again, we met through the Queen Mary. But I'm really excited for this podcast. I think it's great. There's a great message with it as well. So I look forward to seeing where it goes. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much. And we'll go ahead and all the links and everything we talked about in the episode are going to be in the show description for anybody who wants to go back and get those. And I am Amanda Ashley, and you can follow me on Instagram at The Spooky Storyteller. I'll be back in about a month to introduce you to another woman in the paranormal. And until next time, take care of your spooky selves.
That was this month's featured woman in the paranormal. If you know of someone who needs to be featured in an upcoming episode, visit paranormalperception.show and click on the Women in the Paranormal link on the homepage. You can listen to past episodes, learn more about Amanda Ashley, and you can suggest a woman whose contributions need to be highlighted in one of these episodes.
Paranormal Perception presents Women in the Paranormal was recorded, edited, produced and distributed by 22 Creations Multimedia, LLC.